Welcome back to The Behavioral Profit, the show where leadership meets human behavior and drive performance, productivity, and sustainable success. I'm your host, Debbie Longo, Executive Behavioral Coach. Each week, we unpack the mindsets, habits, and cultural shifts that turn teams into high-performing, profit-driven powerhouses, so you can lead with purpose and win with people. Today's guest brings a powerful lens to the hidden behavioral challenges affecting high performance and teams and leaders. We're joined by a licensed psychotherapist, certified hypnotherapist, and anxiety coach who specializes in supporting achieving professionals, especially those who appear to have it all together but may be silently struggling with high-functioning anxiety. She works at the intersection of emotional intelligence, nervous system regulation, and workplace performance. Her approach helps leaders understand how stress and under-stress anxiety can quietly corrode productivity, decision-making, and culture from the inside out. Good afternoon, Shelley. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me, Debbie.
I have a few questions here. The first one is, why does behavior-driven leadership go beyond presence and into action?
Well, it's really important for leaders to not just talk about the changes or the culture that they want within their company. They have to actually embody it. They have to act on it. And really, change comes from the top down. So if a leader wants their company to be more cohesive, wants the culture to be more positive and proactive, anything it is that they're shooting for, they have to act it out first. They have to model it for their employees all the time in order to really get their employees to buy into it, but also to start doing all of those things themselves as a group.
So it's mainly teamwork. Leadership equals teamwork. And that equals productivity. How does subtle burnout show up in your best performing team members?
Burnout is really insidious because it comes on a bit at a time, of course. Most people don't just suddenly have burnout, although it may look like that to leaders because they may have a performer who's doing really well. They're high achieving employees. The ones who never ask for help in particular are susceptible to this. But usually they've been struggling for quite some time, and it shows up with decision-making, with their ability to attend to and focus. They may start making a few more mistakes here and there. They also may be putting in a whole lot more hours than is healthy for them, which might initially sound like a good thing to a leader, but it actually can be a problem because that can be a sign that they're becoming very perfectionistic and really having to work 2-3 times as hard to get their work done, to get it accomplished at the level that they're used to and that the leader is used to as well. You also start to see tardiness oftentimes, or even just people missing days out of work, irritability, difficulty getting along with the other coworkers, withdrawing, just changes that don't seem like this person at all if you know them well.
Sometimes when I do coaching and I coach executives and business owners, this is what they're interested in, is being perfectionists. And sometimes they're really not concerned with whether they burn out themselves or their employees, because what's the main thing is that when they get promotions, they get power, and then money and greed come into the picture. So now you have all three things. You have money, greed, and power. And that is like an addiction because it just feeds and feeds and feeds. And then it's like a cycle. And they can never get out of that because the more money you make, you always want more money. And as another point, I have clients in other countries and they don't work on weekends. They don't take calls. They with their family, they do everything social. They do not want to even be bothered with anything. And these people own businesses and they don't want to be bothered with anything at all on the weekend.
No, absolutely. And that's so interesting that it's different. I kind of would expect that. And I think maybe our leaders here should take a cue from that because often they think that the perfectionism in particular gives them their edge, that that's what makes them more productive. But in fact, it works the opposite way. It's a hindrance. It's a roadblock. And learning how to excel instead of be perfect is where I try to steer people towards. So excellent work rather than perfect work, because perfect isn't attainable, but you'll make yourself crazy and burn yourself out trying to get there.
What simple evidence-based interventions can help your organization shift from anxiety to aligned?
So there's some really, really simple things to just build in that aren't going to require a lot of effort. They're very low-lift techniques. One of the first is starting to perhaps put on some kind of or provide some kind of information about nervous system health, about burnout, and what are the signs of that? So employees can begin to monitor themselves, because a lot of that self-care is going to happen at home, hopefully, so that if you catch it before, it's going to be a lot easier to change and shift around, and you're going to not have the retention problems that you can have when burnout gets severe. You'll be able to keep your talent, basically, and keep them functioning at an optimal level, just like you take your car in for oil changes and tune-ups and things. People need regular maintenance to function their best. So providing some information about it is the first step. Then also for leaders, like I said before, to really model this from the top down. So things like building in 2 to 5 minute breaks between, say, back-to-back meetings, allowing for nervous system resets, or what I call them, where people are able to just kind of breathe deep, walk up and down the hall a little, stretch, whatever it is they need to do. Just really basic, simple things like that are very powerful in resetting our nervous system. And what they're going to see is that their employees are more creative, they're going to be sharper, they're going to be happier, and they're going to be more productive overall. So looking at, do meetings have to be also as long as they are? Are there some things that could be done through emails? Changing some of the language and the culture is important too, instead of really urgent language like, we've got to do this ASAP and we got to crush it and we're swamped, we're completely underwater, to start to look at instead more phrasing like, what's realistic? What's our priority here? How do we break this down into smaller chunks and tackle it? So it's more proactive and it's more positive language. So it doesn't tend to set off the nervous system in the same kind of way. Those are really important pieces that are really easy to implement. They don't cost anything, generally speaking, or very, very little, that can make a huge difference if the leaders are also embodying it. So for a leader to say, I'm going to take a couple minutes and reset here before the next meeting or the next call, to really model that and make it safe to do, and to not focus only on performance metrics, but also encouraging what's going right with the team, what is working well, and encouraging those things as well.
Yeah, so that's good. So one of the things I do is I work with energy, and that's how I get a lot of my information for coaching and different things. And that's kind of the back end of it. And that's really what I teach. And what you're saying, believe it or not, you're talking about changing what you're saying and talking positive and different things. And in essence, that's going to be changing your behavior, all of your behavior, right? From to positive, because all of these things that we're talking about, the burnout and how the business owner and managers talk to their employees, always turn out to be negative 9 times out of 10, which is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And so when I talk positive, even as a human being, but here we're talking about the workplace, I'm changing my energy because I'm only saying positive things. And that not only will help me increase sales and profits, because that's the ultimate goal here, it will change me totally, change my behavior and everything about me, because now I'm producing a different type of energy. And I take that home, I take it to my friend's house, I take it to the store, I take it in my car when I drive in the car. So it kind of carries over. And it starts with the workplace, because if I work 40 hours a week, whether I work from home or I work in the office, doesn't really matter. Because even if I work from home, I'm still interacting with my employees and my boss and everything. So I might be working 40 hours a week. So whether I work night or afternoon, it doesn't matter. I'm with my peers in that I work with 40 hours a week. So that means that how long am I really with my family? I might have a child. I get off of work at 5 o'clock and I might have a child that has to go to bed at 8 o'clock and I have to eat dinner and all this stuff. So I'm spending maybe an hour or 2 hours with the child. So really, I only see my family Saturday and Sunday. I'm just giving an example, you know, if somebody works 5 days a week, I know everybody works different, but the point is that you're only available for your family a certain amount of days. So who's going to influence me more, my family or the people that I work with? So that's why I want to really be careful. And when I go on an interview and I apply for a job, I want to make sure that the boss, the business owner, the company itself is going to constantly be feeding me positivity and helping me grow and helping me in my position. I'm going to learn from them. Maybe I'm going to use them as a mentor or something like that. And that's really, really important. And these are all things that I teach because people don't know. People don't even know what coaching is. People might not even know what therapy is because they just say they might not even go. They might just say, oh, I need therapy. I have a lot of stories, all different stories about therapy. So this is the whole thing. But either way, whatever it is, whatever industry or whoever you ask to help you, we want to make sure that's the ultimate goal. And one of the reasons why I do these podcasts is to educate people. I'm not trying to sell anything. I do have a service, but trying to educate people and help people to understand what coaching is and what I do and how can it help you, whether they go on and do it or not. I mean, they could just take the information and bring it to their workplace or whatever and just learn from it. And that's fine with me. You know, I mean, I've done like 15 of these already, these podcasts where I was a guest and a host. What is high functioning anxiety and how is it different from regular anxiety? Isn't this just normal for high achievers?
That's really the rub, isn't it? That we've started to think that high functioning anxiety in particular and some anxiety in general is normal, that that's just the price you pay for success. So to roll back a little, the difference between the two is anxiety in itself is kind of what most people think of anxiety would being. It's worrying a lot, being very stressed out, being very overwhelmed. It's being able for other people to be able to see how anxious you are is usually how I think of it in this realm. A little different with therapy, but for coaching, it's I think of anxiety as just the anxiety that people can see, where they recognize that someone else is really not doing well, that they're getting very anxious, and that person is having a really hard time carrying on their day-to-day without that anxiety intruding. But high functioning anxiety is like the evil twin, because in that case, people usually look really, really good. They're usually the overachievers. They're people who are highly dependable. They're very responsible, that you can kind of count on for anything. And often leaders are going to love these employees. They're great in a lot of ways. They also have a bit of a time bomb within them. So some of the signs are externally, these people always look very busy. They're always taking on extra projects. They're always doing more and more and more because they tend to have trouble saying no to things and setting appropriate boundaries. But also, they tend to do what I call the three Ps, which are people-pleasing, perfectionism, and procrastination. So some of that procrastination lends itself to being overly busy all the time at the last minute. The perfectionism makes them double, triple, quadruple check something that they already checked twice. And trying to get everything perfect as opposed to excellence could actually slow down the organization. Now, internally, what these people are experiencing often is that they absolutely never know how to rest. They're very uncomfortable, usually slowing down because their brain just keeps hopping. They spend a lot of time in self-doubt. Oftentimes, imposter syndrome is really common, and also physical issues. So headaches, stomach aches, tight chest, things like that. So you're going to see more doctor's appointments. They're going to miss work for things like that, health-related things oftentimes. And so they also tend to need a lot of approval for what they're doing because they don't feel like anything is ever quite good enough. And so they're always seeking that and maybe a little bit needy in terms of reassurance. And so that can sometimes be frustrating for leaders. But all of this adds up to someone who is very unlikely to ask for help and is doing everything really well until they're not, because we all have a breaking point. We're not really designed nervous system-wise to stay in this state of high-functioning anxiety all the time. And so it does wear us out. And you see all kinds of physical and mental issues coming up with it. The problems you're going to see at work, like we talked about, are going to be things like problems with decision-making. They're going to get behind in things. They're going to have trouble focusing. They're going to be less creative, you know, and then there's the attendance issues that sometimes come up later on. You can run the risk of losing really, really good employees if you miss these things, if the burnout gets out of hand.
So I just looked up, I know this is a very general thing. What are the physical issues from high functioning anxiety? Muscle tension, headache, fatigue, sleep disturbance, and digestive issues.
Yes.
So that's just, you might not have all of those issues, but that's just a broad range of something. Somebody that has that high functioning anxiety might have like one or two of those. So when I work with somebody, I consider everything as a separate process. So if somebody has anxiety at work, okay, well, why does that person have anxiety first? And then I find that out, hopefully. And then the person, we go as deep as we can, and then we solve that issue. And then I say, what's happening in the workplace? And then they're going to say, well, this person does this, this person does that. They're always pointing the finger. And then I say, after that, that's a separate process. So now you have two processes. And then after that, I say, okay, well, let's put these two together. And why do you function with anxiety in your workplace? That's the third process. So there are three separate processes, but if I make them separate and then I put both of them together, let's just say, for example, some things have like four or five processes, then they can clearly see it. But if I just say, why do you have high functioning anxiety at work? Then to me, in the way that I do my coaching, you might do it a little differently, but I don't do it like a traditional psychology way. I'm not like a psychologist or psychotherapist or anything like that. But the way that I teach it, if I were to directly come out and say, okay, let's see why you have high functioning anxiety, they're going to be all over the place. Well, this one first pointing the finger, this one did this, this one did that. My family did this to me. I don't feel good at work. My boss says this to me. And then you come out with all of these different things, and it's like a mishmash. It's like making mashed potatoes. And then I can say anything I want. And then it becomes, to me, the way that I do it, it becomes a lot more complicated because now I have to organize everything that they're saying. That's just how I do it. And it works good because it's much easier for them, and they see it right away. A lot of times they'll see it even before I finish it. They might call me and say, oh, wow, I didn't realize this, this, and this. Sometimes it's a little problem, and now I have to fix this, and I think I can fix it. Or they might say, I don't care what you say, and after I give them the solution or on the way to the solution, I don't care what you say, and I'm not interested, and this is not the problem, and then the problem is them, and they just completely refuse to look at themselves. They just want to point the finger.
Yeah.
And these are all experiences that I've had from coaching people. So these are real life experiences. These are not like theories and stuff that I'm just making up as I'm talking. And the reason why I say that is because if it happens to one person, most likely it'll happen to somebody else. If one person thinks one way, most likely somebody else will think the same way. That's the whole thing. And if you're listening to this, if you're a listener, then you might want to think about if you have high anxiety, different things, or maybe you think there's a problem, you might want to think about, Debbie said, these are the processes. Let me think about why I have high anxiety and what's happening at my workplace. There are things that I can do self-help. A lot of people do it. There's a lot of self-help books. How far I'm going to get, I don't know, but it does work to a certain extent.
A lot of them have good advice. I mean, there's, you know, always a couple out there that are questionable. But yes, I always start with understanding anxiety because I work with anxious people. That's my niche. So understanding how it works in your nervous system, what it's for, it actually serves a purpose and you don't want to really get rid of all of it. Believe it or not, you want a moderate amount because that causes you to be alert. But we generally don't think of that moderate amount as anxiety. We just think of it as being aware and alert. And so understanding that our nervous system starts to change depending on what we're exposed to. When you were talking about negative work environments and us being at work so often, when we're in a negative environment, our body and our nervous system adapt to that in not particularly healthy ways, unfortunately.
Agreed, definitely. How does high-functioning anxiety negatively impact businesses?
So again, these are the employees typically who are your star achievers because they rarely make mistakes. They're very, very dedicated. They work very, very hard, and they usually don't ask for help either. And the problem there is that oftentimes they're really struggling because of those things that are internal for them. The external looks great. They look wonderful until the wheels start to fall off slowly. I think in your language, it would be their energy starts to get depleted or starts to shift. And so then they start to have more and more problems, and there'll be small problems initially. There'll be things like I said, like starting to make smaller mistakes or be tardy, or being a little bit late for deadlines, being a little less creative, a little less enthusiastic, a little less support within the team, because they just don't have the bandwidth to keep it up. And then it progresses to more significant issues of decision-making and things getting more and more late, absences and the like, where they're just oftentimes not doing really great with the team. They're not interacting with the team, or they're being more irritable with the team, having trouble getting along, like you were mentioning in that example. So leaders really need to be aware of those employees. And I recommend periodically just taking their temperature in your one-on-ones or whatever. Just how are things going? What's working for you? What's landing for you? And just kind of checking in with them, because they may not know. And unless the leadership is taking advantage of some of this learning and modeling it themselves, then employees are also not going to feel safe talking about, well, you know, I've been struggling a little bit here. I could use some extra coaching on how to manage my time, or I'm not quite sure where to prioritize this project. They won't ask questions if they're not used to the boss even opening up about certain difficulties and challenges.
Yes, that was very good too. And these are all things also that I teach, because not only is the person going to internalize their anxiety, their high functioning anxiety, and think that they can do it, they got it, there's no problems, they don't need to ask anybody for anything. And they might be successful for a while, but it's not a positive thing, obviously. So eventually they're going to start going down the tubes. And when that happens, they're going to say, they're still going to go on with, I don't need any help. There's no problems here. And then she's going to go down, and who's going to go down, or he, the business owner, and who's going to go down with the ship? Everybody.
Exactly. And it's not even, I find sometimes it's that, I don't want to admit that I have a problem, but if I'm honest with myself and know that I'm struggling with my performance, that things are starting to suffer at work, if I have high functioning anxiety, I'm also really afraid of people finding out that I'm not perfect, that maybe I do need some help with this project, or maybe I do need a little more direction from leadership on how to tackle certain things. And if I don't know how to take care of myself and don't want anyone to know I've got a problem, then it's likely to fester.
Yes.
It will bring everyone down, like you said.
Yes, agreed. Definitely. Okay. Next question is, can an anxious brain be rewired for better performance? And if so, how?
That is so important. So actually, yes. In particular, a lot of people with high functioning anxiety and anxiety have often had it for a long, long time. So they're very aware of their problem, whether or not they want to disclose it is a whole other ballgame. And many people believe that if they're anxious, they're just anxious. They're just stuck with it. This is who they are because they've often been doing it a long time. And a lot of the regular advice and the techniques out there really deal with the surface. Change your thoughts and you'll feel better. Things like that. Things that really, if they work at all, they only work for a short period of time. And then you're right back feeling anxious or your high functioning anxiety is out of control. And so people tend to feel pretty hopeless when they have high functioning anxiety and anxiety about ever being able to change that, which is why it's so important to me to get the word out that no, in fact, your nervous system is very, very malleable, that it's plastic. As we say, your brain and your nervous system are plastic. So they change based on whatever experiences you're having. So when you were talking before about positivity in the workplace and working with energy and all of those things, I know you know what I'm talking about, but just for your listeners, we actually, every experience we have, we start to rewire our nervous system. So if we're speaking more positively, if we're in a better environment, if we learn something new, if we read a book, if we go see a movie, anything that we do, try a new recipe for dinner, whatever, we're actually changing our nervous system. And our nervous system can be rewired to be more calm, which then makes everything else more calm. It makes work go more smoothly. Our personal lives go more smoothly. We feel better. We're aware of changing things like that with stroke patients who might have an injury to their brain, and then they work with specialists to be able to route around that so that they can regain functioning and do better again, get back to their normal place, hopefully. We don't think about that being the case for all kinds of mental health, but in fact, it is. So we can get in a habit of becoming or being very anxious one way with high functioning anxiety or with regular anxiety, but that's not the end of the story, that you actually can rewire and change your brain pretty easily if you know what the tools are.
Yeah, so that makes sense. I do something very similar, but I call it reconditioning the brain, the mind, and it's pretty much exactly the same thing that you were saying. But the main thing is to get rid of the negativity, which is everything that we've just talked about, every single thing.
Yeah.
Because there's so many examples of that. And then I'm able to become a little bit more positive. And the thing with physical things, even if I have anxiety and different things, if I try something, if I don't directly fix the problem, I try something else that's like similar, that problem might get fixed. So, and I've had this too. So let's say I say, forget about the anxiety. Let's just not focus on that. You still have anxiety, we know, but let's try to think about all the negative things that you say and what's negative in your workplace. And let's try to focus on becoming more positive. And the person might say, I need help and I'm not making any money. I'm just going through job through job. I'm just running through all these jobs and I'm getting fired or being asked to leave. And I'm at the point where now where I don't have money to put food on my table for my family because I just keep going through jobs. So then they say, oh, I don't have this problem. They say it, I have anxiety, but then they say, I don't have this problem, or however they phrase it. Yeah. And then I could say, let's not worry about that. That's fine. Let's not worry about that. Let's think about some things that are said, maybe that are negative, or I might go around and say something else. And then let's think about something that's positive that you could say instead of that. And then after a few weeks of that, they might say, oh, I realized I have anxiety and now it's gone.
Yeah.
And we kind of call that beat around the bush, because I can still help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. And that doesn't say, that says they have a problem, but they don't want to fix it. It's not that difficult to do.
I think anything you help helps everything else.
There's a lot of situations about that. So somebody thinks I want to get help, but somebody told me that I have this problem. I have high functioning anxiety, but I don't think I do. But if I go to somebody, they're going to tell me I do or I don't. But I'm not going to do anything about it. Well, you know what? I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to say, let's think about something else. And that'll fix the problem. So they think that I'm thinking on the same wavelength as them, but I'm not. Because if I was, then I wouldn't be able to help them.
You have to be able to think about the problem sideways.
How can a company build a brain-friendly culture?
Well, I think the biggest pieces are leaders in particular getting educated about fight or flight response, stress responses, burnout, nervous system, which you could do pretty quickly. It's not a giant thing. You don't need a PhD to know that basically people need to feel safe at some level. They need to rest. They can't be go, go, go all the time, because we're just not designed to do that. It would be like a zebra running and running and running and running and never stopping. Eventually, the zebra would just collapse. And that's what happens to employees when they're in this state and they're just running and running and running. So doing some of those really easy things like educating about different factors so people kind of recognize, yeah, maybe something's going on here and these are some really easy and quick things to do, because I rely on really easy, fast things, because who's got time for it otherwise? Leaders are busy. They're trying to run a company and make a profit. And employees have a lot going on in their lives too. And they're trying to work and do their best and hopefully move up in the company. So doing things to take those little 2 to 5 minute breaks in between. And during that time, doing some breathing, doing some stretching, walk around the building for a sec. Whatever it is to just sort of reset your nervous system so that you can come back fresh. That's really important, considering shortening meetings so that there's a break for that. There's an extra, that 2 to 5 minutes is built into maybe you cut off the meeting at 25 minutes instead of 30 or 55 instead of an hour. Trying to limit meetings for everybody, because meetings are very intense and draining typically. So really looking at, can you do some things asynchronous? What can be done by email? Because that also frees up time for being more productive in many cases. I mean, teams obviously need to meet as well, but they need to balance that with, is this really going to be productive for us? Is this going to get us anywhere? Is this going to get us where we want to go? And the biggest one is for leaders to embody what they're doing, for leaders to take action in modeling some of these behaviors and taking these breaks and being a little more open to positive changes like that. And even talking about it in terms of, I'm going to take a couple minutes here to regroup before the next call. Because if your leaders aren't doing it, your employees aren't doing it. And I read something really recently that 80% of most C-suite leaders felt that mental health is something that their company doesn't really look at a lot. And yet 70% of them felt that they themselves were feeling some burnout and some high functioning anxiety and stress in a significant way. So this is a huge thing that could be very easily shifted, very cost effective. I mean, it takes almost nothing to do some of these skills to reset your nervous system and calm down again so that you can be fresh for the next thing.
It's good for a business owner or an executive to know these things, to teach these things. But they have, in a lot of big companies now, they have help that you could get. They have therapists that you could talk to. They have somebody who's a medium who doesn't have, who doesn't sway one way. So they'll talk to you, but they won't, they'll talk to the employee, but they won't tell the company. Same thing like going to a therapist or a psychologist or something like that. Basically the same thing. Or sometimes they'll have coaches that they could talk to. But the business owner is the one, or the executive is the one that needs to really do this and really understand it. Because they're the ones that if something happens, they're going to be responsible. So what I want to know is, as a business owner or an executive, are you doing this? Think about, if you're the listener, are you doing these things that we are talking about right now? All the negative things. If you're doing the positive things, that's great. But I don't want to help somebody that's doing positive things. The idea is to change. So I want to know, what negative things are you doing? If you're doing this because you most likely are going to be attracted to, because the title of this podcast is going to be something to having to do with high functioning anxiety. So you might see that and you're going to be attracted to something. And that's most likely why you're going to turn on this podcast. So think about, if you have these issues, or you're just curious, or maybe somebody that has them, think about, is this going to, can I relate to any of this that we're saying? The reasons why, because I'm really focusing on, I mean, I'll do the whole company. I've done that before, but I'm focusing on, what is the business owner or the executive doing? How are they acting? How are they treating their employees? And to me, that's the most important thing. Sometimes people get jobs because they're looking for mentors, because they're looking for a boss. And the boss, it's going to be a boss, obviously. And the boss might be a mentor. Maybe they're going into a new industry and they don't really know about it, different things, and they want to find out about it. So if I'm a boss or an executive, I want to be able to present that positivity, and that's how I'm going to get good people. I don't want to get people who are going to be the revolving door, where they stay for a little while and then they're negative, you're negative, they're negative, and then they leave. I have stores over here and companies over here that tell me these stories all the time. This is not uncommon. This is a very, very common thing that happens. And they just constantly blame other people. That's the one thing that I find. The business owner will just say, the employee did this, the employee did that, and that's the reason why the employee doesn't work here anymore, or the employees don't show up. Well, why is that? Okay. Because I'm just going to say, big companies, the biggest companies on earth, Microsoft, Apple, they don't do this. They don't have this problem, okay? They don't act like this, because if they did, they wouldn't be this successful. They wouldn't be the biggest companies. Their executives, their everybody, their managers, everybody are all positive. They have coaches, they have therapists, they have counselors, they have everything available. And all they do is they give positivity to all their employees, okay? And their employees want to work there, and their employees do not quit. They might have temporary jobs, but I'm talking about the employees that are really there, that are really interested in staying there. And that's the reason why they stay there. Main thing is that, as a business owner or an executive or whoever is the higher up, I want to be able to focus on myself. I don't want to point the finger and say, I have this problem, or there is this problem, but everybody else is the problem. I don't have the problem. And that's big, because not only is that more difficult to help the person, which I could do anyway, it doesn't matter, but it makes there be extra steps to helping the person. It just makes it a little bit more complicated. It's an easier time if the person recognizes it, or even just acknowledges it in some way. But it's fine with me, because I could do it either way. I'm just saying it's easier for the person themselves, right? So is there anything that you would like to say in closing?
It really is important to look at these pieces because they're preventative. And so to do that preventative work, as I said, is very low lift. It's not a lot of effort. It's not a lot of cost, but you stand to gain so much and make so much more profit and have the potential to become one of those big companies like you're talking about, to create that kind of culture. And it's kind of the same, as I said before, as doing routine maintenance on your car. If you want your car to last a really long time, then you do that maintenance on it. You get the oil changed, you get the tune-up, you do those things. People aren't really any different in that aspect, that investing a little bit of energy into people as you go along is going to pay off huge dividends in the end.
Yes, agreed. Everything is agreed. This was very, very good. Thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And my pleasure.